Sarcoma Stories is a podcast created by Sarcoma Foundation of America to highlight the voices and experiences of patients, survivors, and care partners. After each episode, you can connect with others in the sarcoma community on our Sarcoma Stories podcast Facebook group to delve deeper into the episode's topics. You can find information on this specific subtype or your subtype, as well as all our podcast episodes on SFA's website, www.curesarcoma.org. Links are in this episode's description. Follow us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts to stay up to date on the latest episodes. Thanks for listening. In this episode, we speak with Jenna Pothier, a DFSP survivor. Jenna talks about the importance of shared decision-making between a care team, patient, and care partners, the challenges of being an adolescent young adult going through a life-changing diagnosis during big life transitions, finding supportive communities and purpose in advocacy work, and shares her advice on how to support someone going through a sarcoma diagnosis. Let's dive in. Welcome to the Sarcoma Stories podcast. My name is Tasha. I am the program manager of engagement and advocacy and also a rhabdomyosarcoma survivor.
And hi, everyone. I am Brandy Felser and I'm the CEO at SFA.
And then Jenna, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes. My name is Jenna Pothier and I am a dermatofibrosarcoma protuberans survivor.
Awesome. Thanks, Jenna. And thank you so much for being here and chatting with us today about your sarcoma experience.
Of course. I'm happy to be here.
Well, I'd love to begin a little bit about how your story began. When you first noticed symptoms, what were they? What was that like for you?
Yeah, so I noticed a bump on my head probably about 5 or 6 years ago. And for a while, I didn't really do anything about it. I had mentioned it to dermatologists and doctors, but nobody seemed to be very concerned about it. So I kind of went on not being concerned about it as well. And then in 2023, the bump had gotten larger and it was just much more noticeable. And since it was on my forehead, I especially noticed it more just cosmetically. So I went to a dermatologist a third time and they had led me to a plastic surgeon because it was going to be a cosmetic procedure. And I decided to go ahead and do that cosmetic procedure to remove what I had been told was a cyst.
Did you have any pain with that, or it was just you saw it on your forehead and you wanted to get it taken care of?
No, there was no pain with it. It was really just like a bump. And in certain lighting, it looked like reddish or purplish, almost like a large pimple. So really the only reason that I sought out anything was for the cosmetic look of it.
Yeah. So when you got to the plastic surgeon, what did the plastic surgeon tell you?
The plastic surgeon was also confident that it was a cyst. I had one consultation appointment and then I had the removal procedure and it was very simple. They just did like a numbing shot, and then I think I had 2 stitches. And I wasn't even aware that they were going to be sending anything off to pathology. I later found out that that's just procedure for the office. And thankfully, they did do that. And then I got the stitches removed a week later, and then a week after that, the plastic surgeon had called me with the pathology results.
What was that experience like when the plastic surgeon said, this is what you have?
Yeah, I was actually, it was my senior year of college, and I was actually away on spring break. I was visiting one of my best friends who lives in Charleston, South Carolina. So I unexpectedly had a call from my doctor that I had missed, and I didn't really think anything of it. I had kind of put the whole thing out of my mind at that point because I had the stitches removed. I thought it was like a one and done kind of deal. And then I called him back and he told me, he originally had told me that it was a rare form of skin cancer, which I later learned that sometimes DFSP does get, you can call it a skin cancer because it's like within the tissue of the skin, but really it's a sarcoma cancer. But he had told me that it was DFSP and it was very rare. And he kind of was like, you're on your own at this point. I'm a plastic surgeon. I don't deal with things like this. And so I was kind of left to figure out what I was supposed to do from there. And it was definitely challenging the time period of my life being in my final semester of college. I had no idea what was to come from all of this. And the fact that I was away from home, away from my family, it was a challenging time for sure.
Yeah, that I can't even imagine, you know, being away on spring break thinking you just had this procedure that's one and done, and then to get that type of call. And so what did you do? Where did you first go to as a resource in that moment when, you know, you were given this information and then told, good luck? What was the next step you took to find out what to do next?
Yeah, thankfully, my parents kind of took the reins for me on this. I wouldn't have been able to go through this whole process without them. But one of the bigger steps that they took was kind of taking the reins on doing some research and finding out what the best treatment options for me would be. We landed with a surgical oncologist, and there were a few different avenues that we could have gone with DFSP. You can get Mohs surgery, which is something they typically use for other skin cancers. We felt more comfortable going with a surgical oncologist and an oncology team, just to be on the safer side and make sure that we were properly dealing with this whole thing.
Can we go back to the conversation with the plastic surgeon? When the plastic surgeon said, this is what you have, that, you know, it's a rare form of skin cancer, how did you ultimately, first, did he refer you anywhere? And then how did you ultimately find out that it's actually considered a sarcoma?
Yeah, the plastic surgeon didn't do any referrals for me. We kind of figured where we wanted to go on our own. My original dermatologist also had some referrals for me, but they wanted to do a Mohs surgery, which we decided against and decided to use an oncology team. I ended up discovering it was a sarcoma, I think mostly through research, and just getting a better understanding of what it was and what parts of the body it can affect and how it affects your tissue and your muscles, and it can affect your bones. And just as well as like the name itself is labeled a sarcoma. So I think that kind of spiked some curiosity for me as well in not calling it a skin cancer.
I'm trying to think of being on spring break, getting a phone call like this, and then not having any information available to you. What was your kind of emotions in that moment?
Yeah, it was definitely a very overwhelming few days and first few weeks, especially being on spring break and being away from home and getting that diagnosis was very overwhelming. And just the lack of knowledge in general, and then also the overwhelming amount of knowledge I felt like I had. I think with anything, you go to Dr. Google and you start Googling things and you look up the name and you come up with all these different like horrible stories. And I just didn't know the extent of anything for the first few weeks. I didn't know what the treatment was going to be. I didn't know if I was going to be able to finish out my senior year, what the rest of my college experience was going to look like. So there was a lot of overwhelming fears of the unknown at that point. Thankfully, I got an appointment quickly with the surgical oncologist. So I was kind of able to put a lot of those unknown fears aside. And I felt like I did have a good plan going forward. But definitely the first few weeks were overwhelming.
How long was it from the time that you got the news from the plastic surgeon until you found and then saw the surgical oncologist?
Yeah, I think it was about 3 weeks. We were lucky to get in with the surgical oncologist pretty quickly. I think any more time, I probably would have driven myself even crazier. So that was.
Well, since your diagnosis, you've had the surgery that you decided with your parents that was the best surgery for you. How did you make that decision? And then what was the process to getting the surgery?
Yeah, my surgery process was unexpected from what I had originally had planned. We did decide to do a wide excision surgery, and that was just through talking with the surgical oncologist. That's the type of surgery that he specialized in, and that's what he recommended for my DFSP. He was confident that he would be able to get clear margins while also not messing up the structure of my face too much, because it was on my forehead. It was a very sensitive area for cosmetic reasons, as well as just where everything was. So the plan originally was to do one wide excision surgery and then work with my surgical oncologist's plastic surgeon to reconstruct my forehead. We ended up needing to do 3 wide excision surgeries in total. And that's kind of the downside with doing a wide excision surgery. When you do Mohs, they can test the margins right away. So it's really more of a one surgery. They have to go back in, but they can do it in one day. Versus with the wide excision surgeries, I was not aware of what the margins were until a few weeks later, and they did have to go back in a few more times.
Wow. And just for listeners who may not be as familiar with these types of surgeries, could you explain a little about what exactly a wide excision surgery is from your understanding as a patient?
Yeah, from my understanding as a patient, a wide excision surgery is just the removal of any cancerous tissue and muscle as much as the surgeon can see and is aware of. I also had MRIs and CT scans done, so they did have some visual of where the cancer might be. My cancer also went all the way down to the skull, so it was a pretty deep surgery that they had to do, and large portions of my forehead they had to take out.
How many surgeries did you ultimately have to have?
I had 3 wide excision surgeries, and then I did 1 reconstructive surgery.
And for the 3 wide excision surgeries, how far apart were they? How often did you have to go back into the hospital to get the surgeries and then including recovery? What was that like?
Yeah, the wide excision surgeries, I think, were a span of about 7 weeks. So there was about 2 weeks in between each surgery that I was getting. The recovery was not terrible. I think for the most part, the hardest part was just coming in and out of the anesthesia and that toll that took on my body. But thankfully, due to the location, and I think a big part of what decreased my pain tolerance was that they were actually taking like nerves and muscle from the area. So I didn't really have a lot of feeling in that area anymore. But because it was on my forehead, it wasn't really affecting like my movement or my sleep or anything like that. It was more so just coming in and out of the surgeries that was challenging on my body.
How long did the ultimate recovery, once you were done with the final surgery, how long did that last for you?
Yeah, the ultimate recovery ended up being about 8 months. My final wide excision surgery was mid-July. And that was when I got the clear margins and all clear that they had gotten all of the cancer. And then at the end of August, I had a reconstructive surgery. And then my wound was officially closed and no longer a wound by about April 2024. So my very first surgery was the beginning of June. So it was about June 2023 to April 2024 was the timeline.
I'm curious about the reconstructive surgery, Jenna, because I know a little bit about your story and I'd love to hear, you know, a little more detail about what that looked like, because it sounds like this was a very innovative reconstructive surgery.
Yes. So huge plug to my doctor. He is a magician and my favorite person in the world now. But he does a lot of innovative research. And he was able to offer me a reconstructive surgery using spray skin technology. So spray skin has been FDA approved for burn victims for a few years, but right before my surgery, I think in June 2023, they had approved it through the FDA for full skin thickness wounds, which is what my wound ended up being. So my doctor was able to offer that to me. And RECELL is, from my understanding, it's a complicated process that has a lot to do with biology and cells and all those things that I don't really understand. But from my understanding, it is a technology that takes a thin layer of skin from the patient. So sort of like a skin graft, but it's much smaller and much thinner. So there's no scar afterwards. And they put that thin layer of skin through a machine that turns it into liquid cells. And then they actually spray those liquid cells onto the wound or the burn. And then those cells attach to the wound and the part of the body and regrow themselves onto that space.
Incredible. When you were having these excision surgeries, did you know that this was something that was going to be on the horizon, or were there multiple options you were considering for reconstruction?
Originally, the plan was to have the wide excision surgeries, and after those wide excision surgeries, the plastic surgeon had placed a synthetic skin graft over my wound. And the original plan was to just allow that synthetic skin graft to grow slowly over time over the wound. And my doctor was confident that that would give me a good cosmetic outlook. But once spray skin was approved for full skin thickness wounds, he felt like adding that on top of the synthetic skin graft would allow for an even better look, as well as a quicker timeline for healing. So I was not necessarily aware that I was going to be getting a fourth surgery. And that realization was definitely hard for me because I had kind of written off surgeries after my three wide excision surgeries. But I am really happy that I ended up going with the spray skin surgery as well.
So all of this started, as you said, while you were in college. How did going through this journey impact finishing college, your vision of what you thought you would do after college?
Yeah, that was definitely a big concern that I had, just given the time of when I was diagnosed. So I was diagnosed in March, which was the middle of my final semester of college. And thankfully, DFSP is an incredibly slow-growing sarcoma cancer. So my doctors were willing to be flexible and wait to start treatment and surgeries until I had graduated in May. And that was really important to me, and I'm super grateful for that, because although there was this like looming sense of doom of what was to come for the summer, I was able to put it in the back of my mind at least a little bit and live out the rest of my senior year and do all the fun things that I wanted to do and graduate with my class and all my friends. So that was really important to me, and I'm really glad that we were able to be flexible in that way. The timing, I guess, was good timing. There's never good timing to have cancer, but I ended up having these over the summer. So I kind of was able to just like block off the summer and kind of put my mind on treatment and getting better. The reconstructive surgery did come as a surprise because I had plans to start grad school to get my master's in social work starting in September. And the reconstructive surgery meant that I had to start a little bit later. So that was really the only big hurdle that I had to come across and kind of change things up a little bit more than I would have liked to. But in the end, it worked out. I was able to start my master's program when I wanted to. I just missed the first week of class, and then I got right into it. And I was able to do what I wanted to do and do what I had planned for myself.
Coming out of college is a big time of transition for any college student, but then to also add in a cancer diagnosis at that time makes it, you know, it's a challenge in a time period that many do find challenging as is. And in the adolescent young adult space, the conversation around that is feeling a little isolated from your peers. What was that experience like for you transitioning out of college, transitioning into cancer treatment? Where did you find community in that area of your life?
It was definitely a very isolating time for me. Like you said, your mid-20s post-grad is a challenging time for everybody. There's a lot of change. There's a lot of new things that are happening, new jobs, school, moving, all those things. And it was definitely really hard for me this summer going through treatment to kind of see all my friends on social media enjoying their summer and enjoying post-grad and enjoying life before they were getting out into the real world. And I kind of had to put a pause on my life. And sometimes there was a lot of jealousy and feelings of isolation and just feeling alone, which I think a lot of cancer patients feel no matter what age you are. It's a very isolating journey because you are the one going through it. And I like to say that I had the best support system possible, but in the end, it's my body, and it's my body that's going through the surgeries and going through the treatment. So it really does feel very isolating. Thankfully, for social media, I was able to find a community of people through a DFSP Facebook group that was very supportive, and it was people who knew exactly what I was feeling and exactly what I was going through, which was very helpful for me. And I also decided kind of on a whim when I was diagnosed to share my journey through TikTok. And by doing so and continuing to share my journey throughout treatment and life post-cancer, I was able to build a community of people who were really uplifting and just inspiring. And it was really helpful and therapeutic for me to be able to share my journey and know that I was educating people and possibly helping other people.
That's so great.
What made you want to put it out on TikTok? What was the inspiration for that? Was it therapeutic, or you just felt like I needed an outlet, or was it I needed to connect with people, or all of the above?
Yeah, I think it was a combination of a lot of things. My original inspiration, honestly, was when I was first diagnosed. I went to TikTok and searched DFSP, and nothing came up. And I think in this day and age, that's kind of the resource that people use is social media to connect and hear other people's stories and educate themselves through real people and real stories. So when I didn't find anything about it, that just kind of gave me the push to want to educate other people and be able to be that person that if another person is diagnosed with DFSP and they search it up on TikTok, they now have my story to look at and be educated by. And I think in the process of doing that, I really learned that it was very therapeutic for me to have an outlet, and it was a really great way to connect with people.
Yeah, that is a really relatable statement, I feel, as a survivor of, you know, in a sarcoma diagnosis, especially trying to find other people who understand and have gone through something similar. And then within a sarcoma diagnosis, finding someone who has your subtype is also a challenge. Since posting on TikTok, have you been able to find anybody that you can relate to?
Yeah, I've found several people who have commented and reached out who have sarcomas, who have other forms of cancer, and who even have the DFSP subtype. So it's been really great, a great way to connect with people.
Given what you know now and looking back through your journey, what would you tell someone who's just diagnosed and searching for answers and information and making decisions about their path forward? What is the one thing that you would say, this is what I wish I knew then? And I want to share it with you.
I think the biggest thing for me was how overwhelming it all felt at first. And just giving people advice and reassurance that it does feel overwhelming right now. It feels impossible. It feels like the end of the world. But in the end, it's all going to be okay. And I think that's really the thing that I wish I had known. If I could go back in time and show myself who had just gotten diagnosed a picture of my life and what I've been able to do and, you know, how my scar looks and how much positive change I've been able to make in my life with this diagnosis, I think it would have been like so inspiring to have been able to just see that and know that as overwhelming and scary as it feels right now, there's an end to it.
I heard you say the positive change it has made in your life. You don't often hear that for people who have been diagnosed with any cancer, especially a sarcoma. So tell us, what is the positive change it's made in your life? And as you move forward, how will it continue to change your life?
Yeah, I like to say that this diagnosis took a lot from me, but it also gave me a lot. And just naturally as a person, I like to try and be more positive and look at the positive side of things wherever I can. So although cancer did take a lot from me, I also was able to find a community of people that I never would have known. I was able to share my story and educate literally millions of people through social media, which still blows my mind. I've been able to participate in fundraising and charity stuff and, just all these things that, although it would have been nice not to have to had gone through cancer to find these people and this community, it is definitely a positive thing that came from my cancer.
It's definitely a big perspective shift. And, you know, to go through that at your age and to take that perspective into the rest of your life, I think is what people really do find inspiring. And like you said, you know, a cancer diagnosis is challenging, was there any particular coping mechanism on the hard days that you found helpful in your experience?
Yeah, I think the most important thing for me was surrounding myself with people who love and care about me. My support system was so incredible throughout this whole thing. I have an amazing family, amazing friends, amazing people all around me who were always there to lift me up and get me through those hard days. I think another thing that was really helpful was journaling. I think being able to document everything and have it. And now that I'm further out from my diagnosis and my treatment, to be able to look back at that and kind of see how I was feeling and see how far I've come is so helpful now. And I know it was really helpful then to be able to get those feelings out. And especially just having the community of other sarcoma patients and survivors, to be able to talk to them and vent to them and ask the hard questions that maybe other people would be uncomfortable answering, was honestly probably the biggest coping mechanism that I utilized.
Yeah, they often say it's the worst club, but the best members. I love what you said about surrounding yourself with people who love and care about you, because at the time of this recording, November is National Family Caregivers Month. So a big shout out to those people in your life and everyone else's.
And with your support system, you know, oftentimes, having been a caregiver myself, you know, sometimes you wonder, what's the best way I can do to support, right? Mm-hmm. And whether you're a friend or you're a caregiver or you're a family member, I want to support and I want to show my love and support. And oftentimes people don't know what to say or don't know what to do and want to be there for someone. From your perspective, having gone through this and having an amazing support system, what are ways that people, from your perspective, could support someone going through this journey?
Yeah, I think it's different for everybody. For me, I definitely made my diagnosis and my cancer and my journey more public, which I think sometimes made it easier for the people around me to feel more comfortable bringing up the subject or asking questions, because they knew that I felt comfortable talking about it. For other people, it may feel more comfortable to keep it private, and then it's kind of hard to know whether you should bring it up or just ignore the situation or not do anything. And I think it definitely depends on the person. For me, I wanted to talk about it, and I felt some level of frustration at times when people wouldn't ask me about it and people would ignore the elephant in the room, which is that I had cancer and I was going through this and it was a very hard time in my life. And that almost made me more uncomfortable than being asked questions and being asked how I was doing and how my treatment was going. So I think the best advice I can give to people on the outside who are trying to navigate a loved one having cancer is really to ask. There's never any harm in asking, what can I do for you? What's comfortable for you? Even just, how are you? And then somebody can respond with as much or as little information as they want to. But for me, I think trying not to make things uncomfortable, and as hard as that is, because cancer is uncomfortable and it is upsetting and it makes people uncomfortable, even just asking is the best way. And then the person who is going through the cancer can decide for themselves what they feel like they want to share.
It's almost like let the patient lead, you know, give them the opportunity to lead you into what would be best for them.
Exactly.
You mentioned journaling. Have you thought about trying to turn your journaling and your experience into a book that might help others?
Yes, I have thought about it a little bit. I think that would be like a later in life venture. Maybe once I'm retired, I can use my journal and my knowledge and my journey to kind of make a little project for myself. Yeah, I think that I would love to do that. I think it would be a later in life project, though.
Yeah, you have a lot going on right now, trying to get through grad school. And you're in grad school for social work. What is it that you want to do with a social work degree? What are your ambitions with that?
Yeah, I'm set to graduate May 2025. So I'm starting to do the whole job search thing and think about my future. Currently, my goal is to be a school social worker in an elementary setting. And I've kind of always had that passion. I've always known I wanted to work with kids and help people. But my journey with cancer definitely just enhanced that desire in me and gave me more empathy and more patience. And it's actually definitely helped in that way.
So where are you now with your treatment journey? You've had the surgeries, you have the reconstructive surgery, you do scans currently. What does the future look like with your treatment journey?
So right now I'm a little over a year cancer free. My maintenance is seeing a dermatologist every 6 months who just does skin checks in case of any sort of reoccurrence. And then I see my surgical oncologist every 6 months as well. And we alternate between x-rays and chest CT scans because although DFSP does rarely metastasize, when it does, it presents in the lungs. So we just do scans and x-rays of my lungs every 6 months to make sure that everything is still clear there. And he checks up on my surgical site as well. And then I see my plastic surgeon less frequently now, but I will, it probably will end up being about every 6 months. And the next step for my scar and really the final step for my scar is going to be laser treatment to just help with some of the discoloration. And there's some like ridges in the scar as well. So my plastic surgeon will do laser treatment on the scar coming up shortly. And that will be kind of the last step.
You also talked about positives that came out of this journey for you was your speaking and advocacy work. What do you do in terms of patient advocacy and growing awareness about sarcoma?
Yeah, I think through social media and utilizing TikTok, I've been able to educate a lot about sarcoma cancer, specifically DFSP. I get comments and messages of people saying they've never heard of this or they know somebody who has this and they had never known anybody else who had it. So I think just raising awareness in general is important in the world of sarcomas, especially with rarer subtypes. I've also participated in some of the SFA events. I was meant to do the Race for Sarcoma, but I ended up being sick. But I will be doing the next one that comes around to Boston. And just getting to know people in the foundation. I've also done a little bit of work with the Catherine J. Malatesta Foundation. And they do a lot of work with the Sarcoma Foundation of America as well. I also ran my own fundraiser last year.
You mentioned having a community of people around you during your diagnosis who love and support you, but it's clear that, you know, that love and support still surrounds you with just how many people who you've been able to get involved with you in these fundraisers, and which is really incredible and, you know, a huge testament, I think, to who you are as a person. I mean, something you should be so proud of.
As you said, a cancer diagnosis is different for everyone. No one journey is the same. Everyone's experience is different and everybody approaches it differently, and the facts of it is very different. Many people don't want to talk about it. And when the journey is over, if it's ever really over, but we'll say when the journey is over, they want to put it in the rearview mirror. Do you find it difficult to continue to talk about it and to continue to raise awareness and continue to be this person that communicates with others and takes on their stories and tries to help them to navigate through their journey? Do you find that difficult, or do you find it more therapeutic?
Yeah, I think I find that aspect of it therapeutic. I think for me personally, and like you said, for everybody, cancer is different. But for me, I feel most comfortable talking about it and not locking it away and pretending that it was something that never happened to me. Because for me, it was such a huge part of my life. And I don't want to just write off that part of my life and the good, the bad, the ugly, everything that came with it. It all changed me as a person. And I like to think that it created positive change for me. So I personally feel it's therapeutic for me to keep talking about it and keep talking about all aspects of it, whether it's positive or negative. I prefer to keep it out in the open.
Yeah, I have a follow-up question to that. With hearing, you know, so many other stories, and even though it is therapeutic to you, and how do you take care of yourself while also still advocating and bringing awareness to sarcoma?
Yeah, I think there's an important balance with advocating and keeping my story alive, because not all of it is easy and not all of it was good and positive. There was a lot of challenging times and negative times, and that does come up sometimes when doing this advocacy work and talking about it. I find myself being pretty good at being able to separate myself when I need to, and being able to step away when I need to. But I know that's not always the case for everybody. But I think just going with what you're most comfortable with and being able to speak up and advocate for yourself as well. So if there are questions that people are asking that feel uncomfortable, being able to say, I don't feel comfortable talking about that. Or if I get messages or somebody reaches out and I'm not in a space where I feel like I can be helpful, I just wait to respond to messages or turn down certain opportunities that might feel like they're too much for me. So part of advocating for sarcoma and DFSP is advocating for myself as well and taking care of myself.
That is such a good reminder that there is still self-advocacy involved in advocacy.
Yeah.
And in a sarcoma diagnosis.
Mm-hmm. Self-advocacy is very important. You know, in SFA, we talk a lot about empowering the patient to be part of the decision-making process with their journey. And we talk about shared decision-making with the medical team. It sounds like, circling back to your surgeries and your decision about surgery, it sounds to me like that was part of the conversation of, I can have one surgery or I can have the other, but it was your decision and your family's decision. Was there any pushback or conversation from any medical teams that maybe one was better than the other? And or was it just a real shared decision-making process?
Luckily for me, it was it was a very shared decision-making process, and I had a lot of support in being able to make decisions for myself from both my medical team and my family and my support system. Everybody really wanted, in the end, for me to do what I felt was best. And for me personally, that was actually a little bit challenging because I did at some points feel this pressure of, am I making the right decision? How do I know I'm making the right decision? What if the other decision is better? But again, with my medical team, they were such knowledgeable people and so supportive of me that they were able to help me make those decisions. And in the end, I'm really happy with all the decisions that were made.
I think many people diagnosed with sarcoma feel exactly what you just said, Jenna, is, am I making the right decision? Which path should I go down? Is this the right path? And I think the caregivers and the family wonder that as well. I know in my own experience, I remember, you know, my mother, both of my parents had cancer and are not with me anymore. And I remember my mom was first and sitting in a room and they were giving us options. And she looked at me and said, what do you think? And I thought, well, that's up to you. I mean, this is your journey. You have to make that choice. But I can imagine that's a very isolating feeling to have to make, to feel as if you have to make those decisions on your own. Of course, we had discussions, but at the end of the day, it's your decision to make, not the medical professional's decision, not family and loved ones. It's the person that's actually going through it. But I can imagine it's very isolating. I know I've reflected back on that journey that I went through with my mother and really thinking about what it must have, not understanding in the time what she was going through so much because it was such a whirlwind. But thinking back now of her having such overwhelming information, and I imagine that's a feeling of having so much overwhelming information and where do I go? What do I do? And hopefully this is the right decision that I make. Did you have feelings similar and how did you work through those?
Yeah, absolutely had feelings of a lot of pressure and overwhelming decision making and isolation. And it kind of goes back to what I said earlier that I know I had this great support system, but in the end, this is me and my body and my cancer. And that kind of overwhelming, isolating feeling of nobody else can do this for me. I have to do this. So there were definitely a lot of times where I felt that and that felt really heavy. But I think leaning on the people around me as much as I could really helped me. And it made me feel like I was making those important decisions less alone. So although in the end it was my decision, I relied on a lot of information from my doctors, opinions of people in my life. And while that can also be overwhelming, I think in the end it was easier for me to hear from other people and hear other people's perspective and not carry so much of that weight just on my own.
It's like they can't do it for you, but they can do it with you.
Exactly.
Well, Jenna, this has been an amazing discussion with you today. And we so appreciate you sharing your journey, not just with us on this podcast, but with the many people through TikTok that you're able to reach and feel in many ways the same as you felt, isolated and alone and searching for a community, and to be able to find one that you have created and that you nurture. So thank you for doing that on behalf of all those out there that we hear from all the time. That's one of the things we hear the most is how isolating it is, not only to have cancer, but also to have a sarcoma. So thank you for doing that. I do want to ask one final question. What message would you want to leave with people listening to this podcast and your story? What's the one last thing you would want to leave with them?
I think a final message is as negative and challenging as a cancer diagnosis feels, you can always turn negative things, you can spin negative things positively. And I think that is my biggest advice for anybody in any situation, not just going through cancer or other medical issues, but anything. My advice is to, as hard as it may be to find something positive and hold on to that and run with that. And know that in the end, you'll remember the positive part of things more than you'll remember the negative part of things. And it's not always easy to stay positive, and you shouldn't stay positive all the time because that's not realistic or possible. And it's okay to have bad days and have bad moments, but in the end, find something positive in everything you go through and hold on to that.
And Jenna, if someone wanted to connect with you, where could they do that?
I'm on TikTok. My user is JPOT13. And on Facebook, I'm in there's one DFSP support group, a small community of us. And I'm in that group as well. So I encourage anybody, if they would like to reach out and message me.
And speaking of Facebook groups, this podcast also has a Facebook group. So people will be able to connect with you and comment on the thread for your episode as well.
Yes, looking forward to it.
Well, thank you so much, Jenna, for joining us today. As Brandy said before, we really appreciate you sharing your story with us here and with the community in general.
And thank you for being a part of the SFA community as well. We really appreciate that and your support and work with us as well, and for your growing awareness about sarcoma, because we know how important that is.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me and giving me the platform to share.
Thanks for joining us today. Did this episode resonate with you? You can join the discussion about this episode in our Sarcoma Stories Facebook group, linked in the show notes. If you found this podcast helpful, your feedback is incredibly valuable and helps to create more awareness about sarcoma while sharing vital resources with someone who may need it. Be sure to leave a rating and review. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.